raining also.
In the time of the raining, yes, it is recommended to do this supplication to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In the eve of the Friday that we are talking about, and of course, many other time that which is recommended. And I would like to add to that the factor of the place. For example, beside the grave of the noble prophet and his pure progeny, it is recommended to do that. Many other recommendation for the time and for the place that, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in that time or in that place accept our prayers.
Thank you very much, dear Sheikh, for your explanations and your respected listeners for staying tuned and listening to Canon Islamic Beliefs from IRB English Radio and our discussion concerning the importance of time, specifically in this show, in our worship and in our worships. And more specifically, we have been talking about the importance of the day of Jum'ah, the Friday, in Islamic narrations and to see what is different, what's make it different with other days of the week. And it was explained, alhamdulillah, in depth in this show. I'd like to thank Sheikh Nur Muhammad for his enlightenment and scholarly answers to the questions, and you for staying tuned. I live in Allah's protection. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. Li Ali wa Hussein wa Hassan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن.
Communique. The 2022 Winter Olympic Games kicked off in Beijing on February 4th, making the Chinese capital the first city in the world to have hosted both the Summer and Winter Olympic Games. Now, China prides itself on being the host nation of the sporting event, and there have been record-breaking numbers of viewers. But if you thought the coverage and the news about the Olympics was just sports, well, you'd be flat-out wrong. Before the games even started, they were already shrouded in controversy and heated political debate, specifically about China being the host nation. Many have maintained that this is strictly a sporting event and politics should stay out of it. Others, namely the United States, insist that China's alleged human rights abuses are simply too grave to ignore. And then there are those who would argue that the U.S. is exaggerating those issues for political gain, and more importantly, accusing China of things that it has done itself. Now that would be quite hypocritical. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. So the Winter Olympics of 2022 kicked off on February 4th in China's capital, Beijing. It goes without saying the Olympics are one of the most popular sporting events on the planet, and this time is no different because virtually every day you see the games among the top news stories. But not so much because of the sports themselves, but rather because of the politics. I mean, sure, if we're being realistic, sports or sporting competitions are often politicized. That's nothing new. And the Olympic Games are certainly no exception. But we cannot deny that this time, it's highly antagonistic. And it's important to examine what certain countries are accusing China of and what their political agenda is. Undoubtedly, this is a very significant moment for China. Its capital, Beijing, is now the world's first dual Olympic city, meaning it has hosted both the Summer and Winter Olympics. And naturally, China views that as a very special thing. It's a very prestigious status for China. Now, of course, the West doesn't see it that way. the West is outraged. Western countries have been attacking China and its Beijing Olympics since before they even started. Already several months prior, the United States just came out and announced that it would be boycotting the Beijing Olympics. White House spokesperson Jen Psaki confirmed the boycott on December 6, 2021.
The Biden administration will not send any diplomatic or official representation to the Beijing 2022 Winter Olympics and Paralympic Games, given the PRC's ongoing genocide and crimes against humanity in Xinjiang and other human rights abuses.
And of course, whenever the U.S. says, jump, its minions ask, how high? After the White House announced its boycott of the Beijing Olympics, the United Kingdom did the same.
As I've said before, we do not support sporting boycotts, but there are no plans for ministers, certainly no plans for ministers to attend the Winter Olympics.
So did Canada.
We are extremely concerned by the repeated human rights violations by the Chinese government. That is why we are announcing today that we will not be sending any diplomatic representation to the Beijing Olympic or Paralympic Games this winter.
And so did Australia.
The Australian government will not be sending any official representatives to the forthcoming Winter Games.
So why is the United States, why are the U.S. and its allies boycotting the Beijing Winter Olympics? Well, the official narrative is that they're protesting China's human rights abuses. They claim that China is committing gross human rights violations in Tibet, Hong Kong, and cracking down on Muslims, specifically Uyghurs and other Muslim groups in the Xinjiang province. During the opening ceremony at the so-called Bird's Nest National Stadium, the final Olympic torchbearer was Zhao Jiawen, who is a Uyghur Muslim. Essentially, what China was doing is saying, look, we don't have a problem with Uyghurs or Muslims. We have a problem with separatism. We don't discriminate, so here's a Uyghur athlete, a Uyghur Olympian, opening up the Winter Games. Now, the Western media, of course, were not impressed and didn't waste the opportunity to attack China, claiming that China was using this Uyghur athlete as a token and that the entire thing was done cynically. Danny Haifong joins me now. He's an author, political commentator, and contributing editor at Black Agenda Report. Danny is also the co-host of the YouTube show The Left Lens and co-editor of Friends of Socialist China, a platform that promotes understanding of Chinese socialism. Danny, thanks so much for taking the time. It's really great to have you on.
Thank you so much, Richard. It's always good to be with you.
Likewise, brother. You know, I want to start out with the Beijing Winter Olympics that have just kicked off. In the news, we don't hear so much about the sports. We hear more about the games being boycotted by the United States, the United Kingdom, and co. I've heard people in the United States refer to them as the genocide games. Can I just get your thoughts in general on this whole debacle?
Well, I watched the opening ceremony February 4th. I was up early. I was watching it through NBC News streaming service. And it was just absolutely deplorable. I mean, the level of propaganda that China has been targeted with by the corporate media is astounding. And this has been going on for years. But the corporate media, the military-industrial complex, and these humanitarian interventionists in both camps as well as the political establishment have all coalesced around this human rights narrative to attempt to delegitimize China in this momentous occasion. I mean, it's historic that China is the first dual Olympics country. Beijing is the first dual Olympic city. Many of the facilities are being reused from the 2008 Summer Olympics. It's 100% green powered. And the COVID-19 success that China has had in containing the virus is being implemented to protect both athletes, all the participants, all of the workers, as well as the Chinese people, because this is a huge international event. And when you have a highly contagious pandemic still spreading, China has taken it very seriously. And that has become also the target of attack by the media, by the establishment. And so really, it's a full frontal assault.
Why all this propaganda? What are they trying to accomplish here? Because there is a lot of prestige associated with, as you said, being the first country to host, you know, both Olympics, the first city. So, I mean, what is the root of all this? Why all this propaganda? Why all the vitriol?
Well, I think first and foremost, the vitriol towards China is about the U.S.'s overall geopolitical strategy in the West, the junior partners that the United States has curried favor with because of very common, similar common interests, imperialism, capitalism, exploitation. This is where the West and the United States, Israel, and all of the allies that the U.S. has been able to obtain, that's where they all can agree upon. And oftentimes, it's not an equal relationship either. It's the U.S. attempting to bully them into really towing the line on the agenda, and the U.S. claims and desires to be a permanent hegemon, a permanent imperial power that has no rival. And so at the most basic level, the United States views China as a legitimate rival, but it's not enough to look at it in that lens, because that can lead to this false equivalency that unfortunately some of our friends on the left make, which is that China is just some equal imperialist power, that actually it's going far beyond what the United States can do. There's a lot of this misinformation that goes around, and so it's important to understand that the United States, if China was indeed an imperialist power, a colonial power, it wouldn't really have a problem with that. It would actually probably be seeking much closer relations to China than it ever even had during the normalization period and during the so-called entrance into the World Trade Organization. Not even that is enough to prove that China and the U.S. were some kind of similar entities. How the United States deals with its so-called allies is through organizing them and enforcing a common agenda that China has never really been a part of, because China is led by a communist party. China has 1.4 billion non-white people. It is a country that proudly espouses socialism, and it is one that really employs a different model of international relations, one that is respective of international law. I mean, that's really at the basic level how China behaves around the world. But then you add in the fact that China's economic model is not just a rival and not just set to surpass the United States in size, but it also is setting a different kind of agenda.
Now, China opened up the Olympic Games with a Uyghur athlete, and that was met with criticism. Do you believe that that was a cynical gesture by China or a genuine gesture? And you know, what if the Olympics had not been opened up by a Uyghur athlete? They would probably still complain about that anyway, right?
It was a really beautiful display that China presented in the opening ceremony as well, was the passing of the national flag among representatives of the 56 ethnic groups. And they were passing the flag, and then it was taken by representatives of the national military. And, you know, there was that. I mean, that was a scene. Like, that was incredible. And it's in response to this. I mean, we can't deny that it's a total response to the fact that the United States and the West have propagandized around this issue for years now, first with concentration camps, then with genocide. And there's no escaping it. So, of course, I think China is totally correct in responding, especially responding in this kind of way, a very professional manner, one that definitely sends a message to Western audiences that China does not adhere to that narrative. China does not believe in that narrative, and that the Chinese people don't believe in that narrative, because the cheers were very loud during that part of the ceremony. And so it's just important to understand that that Uyghur genocide narrative was always dubious. I mean, we can go over the sources probably for hours and hours, from Adrian Zenz, Victims of Communism Foundation, all the way to the Atlantic Council, and all of the institutions and proxies for these institutions that have been rolled out, Radio Free Asia, Conduit of the CIA, I mean, on and on and on. These institutions have repeated this lie over and over and over again, and just basic data disproves it. And so it's really an agenda. It's about targeting Xinjiang. It's about splitting China apart. It's a losing mission, and it's already lost because China is more united than ever. And a lot of it is because of this propaganda war, because ordinary Uyghurs, ordinary anyone in China doesn't want the country to be split apart. It doesn't want separatism to be fueled. It doesn't want economic livelihoods to be threatened. So the more that the China is attacked by the U.S., the more unified the country becomes. And that's just one of the, I guess, benefits of this, silver linings, I guess, of the U.S.'s failed strategy.
You wrote about Eileen Gu. She's a world. You wrote about Eileen Gu. She's a world-class athlete, half American, half Chinese. And she announced in 2019 that she would be representing China in 2022. And you wrote in your article that, quote, Gu has been labeled an ungrateful traitor to the United States for supposedly spurning the opportunities offered to her in the land of the free. The responses on Fox where they were saying that she's switched sides and she's turned her back on the United States, you know, the country that raised her and provided her with training and facilities that only the U.S. has. I mean, what does that even mean? Like, other countries don't have anyone who can ski? What do you think of all this?
Essentially, it is a byproduct of a long history of racism toward Chinese, but just in general, right? This racism, this imperialism that the United States has developed over the course of its development is par for the course in reproducing the exploitation that is inherent to the U.S. way of life. And so those who cross the boundaries of what I call political whiteness, which is a tool of imperialism, this idea that you will have solidarity with the so-called enemy other, the country that has been targeted for elimination, destruction, regime change, whatever, that this is akin to renouncing your citizenship. That's what Tucker Carlson called it. And that's what many people are saying, when in fact, Eileen Gu, if you just listen to her words, it's pretty clear. Listen to her words and understand who she is. It's pretty clear that her relationship to China is very deep. It's not that she is doing this for political reasons. She's doing this because, one, she's a citizen of China. Two, her mother is very deeply involved in China's economy. She goes to China nearly every summer before the pandemic. And she has many Chinese sponsors. She's well known in China. And she's making it very clear the more and more pressers she does, because the question is asked over and over again, why'd you do this? Why'd you choose that? What do you think of what people are saying? She was very clear recently after she won her first gold medal that she's receiving love. And I don't think people understand that there's a good reason why she chose China over the United States. And I think we're seeing that play out. She is Chinese and she loves China. She loves the Chinese people and she has affinity towards them. They have affinity towards her. She broke the internet after she won the gold medal in China. Weibo shut down because of how many people were sharing and celebrating her victory. And so that's the kind of love she receives. You follow her Instagram, you see every post she's, you know, being mobbed by people and she's sharing all of the heartfelt messages she's getting from people. And the United States is trying to politicize that because they see it as a smack in the face. The ruling class sees it as a smack in the face. And a lot of people who have digested this anti-China racism and resentment, they see it as a slap in the face. They see it as an attack on the U.S. itself, on American exceptionalism itself.
It's frankly quite incredible. You know, I know Fox News likes to paint itself as sort of anti-war, but it's really just fueling, you know, this resentment, which, I mean, what good does that do anyone? I think it's very embarrassing, as you just put it. It's really, you know, really telling on yourself by doing that. But I mean, what is this kind of reaction to Eileen Gu tell you about this anti-Chinese racism? Because, you know, this whole hashtag that we saw, like, stop hate against Chinese, but yet there's always antagonism towards China. Like, that doesn't stop, you know? And we've also heard these other myths that, oh, careful going to the Olympics because the Chinese are spying on the athletes, like, you know, as if the NSA hasn't been bugging everyone's phone on the planet. And then, of course, you know, they were also saying how Peng Shui, this tennis player, had gone missing. Can you clue us in on all of this?
Well, it's more propaganda, and there's just been an onslaught, right? I mean, Peng Shuai, she was unfortunately exploited by the media, the Western media, for a post that she made about a former Chinese official, former vice premier, Jiang Guoli, who supposedly was accused of sexual assault, but really it sounded like a complex situation, and certainly there may be things to investigate there, but the problem with it was is that it was mistranslated, it was taken into account, and then there was a rumor that she was missing altogether, and that China had somehow detained her or disappeared her, and all of that wasn't true, right? Within a day of that accusation, photos of her on WeChat, video of her at a Beijing, teenage skating competition, they started to emerge, and the agenda is pretty clear here. And she's come up in the Olympics as well, right? Eileen Gu was asked a question about Peng Shuai, and Eileen Gu was like, "I'm happy that she's here and that she's safe," and that's all she said, because she didn't want to get into the politics of it. Because there's a lot of politics in this. The United States, if you just look at the corporate media coverage, it's not just Peng Shuai, it's everything.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
It's obvious to anyone who's paying attention that every single accusation made by the United States, every charge leveled against China, is hypocrisy of the highest order. You want to talk about genocide against Muslims? Sure, let's talk about genocide against Muslims. Who bombed Afghanistan? Who bombed Iraq? Who bombed Syria? Who bombed Libya? Who bombed Yemen? Who bombed Somalia? Who bombed Pakistan? Who attacked Iran? The United States literally destroys half the Middle East, half West Asia, and then they have the nerve to talk about Muslims? You have the nerve to pretend you care about Muslims? I mean, this is an insult. You know, let's talk about locking up Muslims in camps. The United States has a torture camp, Guantanamo Bay, that is reserved solely for Muslim men that have been kidnapped around the world, rendered, and kept there for years and years and years without charge, without trial. A few months ago on this program, I spoke to Mansour al-Daifi, who was kept in Guantanamo Bay for 14 years, no charge, no trial. Here, listen to what he has to say about how much respect the Americans have for Muslims.
They used to take the Holy Quran, put it on their feet, pee on it, throw what? It on the ground. Yeah, the interrogators, yes. Stopping us from praying, miking us. I remember when I used to pray, they would throw us the Israeli flag or the American flag. Sometime there was we call it the satanic room, where they have a room and dark room where they put candles, and the floor is satanic stars and signs.
What?
It is crazy. I told you, Guantanamo was an experimenting lab.
Okay, so what does all of this mean? Does this mean that China is perfect and everything it does is perfect? Absolutely not. No country is perfect. But this is some staggering, blistering hypocrisy. And then, of course, some people will say, two things can be bad at once. Yeah, sure. The problem is the media that are constantly attacking China and calling China out never call out the United States. And more importantly, the crimes perpetuated by the United States are systemic and on an unimaginable global scale. The United States doesn't just attack Muslims at home in the U.S. It literally goes around the globe invading Muslim countries and slaughtering Muslims in the street, in the market, in their bedrooms. It's not even comparable. And you hear a lot nowadays about China's human rights record in the media. Well, let me jog your memory. You see, it's not that long ago that the U.S. enjoyed a somewhat good relationship with China. Hillary Clinton, who was then the Secretary of State, actually went to China in 2008, and she was singing a very different tune compared to what you hear now.
Driving on the Third Ring Road in Beijing, I felt like I was watching a movie in fast forward. From a few high-rise buildings on my last trip to a gleaming Olympic complex and corporate skyscrapers today. We welcome China's role in promoting peace and stability in the Asian Pacific. Over the past 30 years, the United States has helped to foster security in the region, and that has been a critical factor in China's growth and an important strategic interest of our own.
I didn't hear Hillary Clinton complaining about Tibet. After all, Tibet is not an issue that just started yesterday or with the Beijing Olympics. So how come no one was mentioning it back then? I guess those human rights issues weren't so important back then, were they? And there was nothing about Uyghurs. There was nothing about Hong Kong. How weird. You see, the problem is that most people, especially Westerners, don't understand the geopolitical games being played by their governments. Let me spell this out as simply as I can. The West does not care about Muslims. The West does not care about Uyghurs. The West does not care about Kurds. Uncle Sam doesn't care about anyone. As soon as the United States is done using someone for political gain, they drop them like a hot potato. So now you see, all of these claims that the US and its allies level against China are not only dubious, but extremely hypocritical. And this bitterness, this jealousy that's expressed in the form of Olympics coverage, it's all part of America's new Cold War on China. The U.S. is crumbling from within while China succeeds. And that breeds jealousy, hatred, and war because the U.S. feels threatened by an alternative model. You see, when China was playing ball and not so much of a rising power, that was fine. But now that China is a real contender and set to overtake the United States and become the world's largest economy, now it's a different story. The United States does not like competition. It does not like that China's system makes its system look obsolete. And it doesn't want the world shifting from U.S. hegemony to a multipolar system. The United States is crumbling, literally. The infrastructure is falling apart. There's a homelessness crisis, wealth inequality, racial inequality. And meanwhile, China is busy linking up its country with high-speed rail and lifting millions of people out of poverty. And the world sees this and knows. And that's precisely why over 120 countries have signed up to join China's Belt and Road Initiative, because they know that is where the future lies. It doesn't lie in some archaic, capitalist, greedy imperialist system that spawns nothing but conflict and destruction. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
In the Limelight.
Sources in the Pentagon have told Reuters that the Biden administration is poised to propose a budget for national defense that could top $800 billion for fiscal year 2023, an enormous sum that far exceeds the levels reached at the peaks of the Korean and Vietnam Wars or during the Reagan buildup of the 1980s. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by William Harting, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Massive Folly, Biden's 2023 defense budget could top $800 billion. Here's more on the story. Sources in the Pentagon have told Reuters that the Biden administration is poised to propose a budget for national defense that could top $800 billion for fiscal year 2023, an enormous sum that far exceeds the levels reached at the peaks of the Korean and Vietnam Wars or during the Reagan buildup of the 1980s. It is also more than three times what China spends on its military and 10 times what Russia spends. The figure apparently includes items beyond the Pentagon budget proper, such as spending on nuclear weapons at the Department of Energy, along with billions in defense-related spending at other government agencies. The administration's proposal is misguided and counterproductive, but not unexpected. A Pentagon review of the U.S. Global Force posture released late last year was a status quo document that failed to call for significant reductions in the U.S. military deployment in the West Asia region, even as it signaled an intention to bulk up the U.S. presence in East Asia. And as Queen's Institute distinguished non-resident fellow Joseph Cronison has noted, the Biden administration's forthcoming nuclear posture review is likely to leave the Pentagon's 30-year plan to build a new generation of nuclear-armed bombers, submarines, and land-based missiles largely intact at a cost of up to $2 trillion. Military hawks are already circling, suggesting that the Biden proposal will not be sufficient to keep up with inflation, to the detriment of military readiness. These cries for more ignore the fact that there is ample room to scale back from current levels, given better budget discipline at a Pentagon and, most importantly, a new, more realistic strategy that doesn't cast the United States in the role of global policeman. On the question of spending discipline, the Pentagon is the only major federal agency never to pass an audit. It can't tell taxpayers exactly where its money is going, nor does it have an accurate inventory of equipment and spare parts, leading to systematic duplication and waste. The department routinely overpays for basic items like spare parts. In one case involving the notorious supplier TransDigm, there was an astonishing markup of 3,800% on a single part and overcharges on a sampling of components totaling $20.8 million. This is a small change by Pentagon standards, but multiplied by thousands of suppliers, it no doubt adds up to billions in overcharges. On a larger scale, the Pentagon too often buys weapons that are overpriced, dysfunctional, or unnecessary. A case in point is the F-35 combat aircraft, the most expensive single weapons program ever undertaken by the Pentagon. It is being rushed into service before testing has been completed, resulting in costly retrofits for design flaws that are still being detected. It has over 800 unresolved defects, is extremely difficult to maintain, and cost $38,000 per hour to operate. These and other serious problems led House Armed Services Committee Chair Adam Smith to remark that he was tired of pouring money down the F-35 rat hole. Add to the F-35 systems like $13 billion aircraft carriers that have trouble launching and landing aircraft and vessels like the littoral combat ship that can't operate in high-intensity combat environments, and it is clear that there is ample room to cut procurement of big-ticket items without undermining the security. The biggest area of savings in Pentagon spending would flow from the development of a new strategy that puts diplomacy first, ends the forever wars, reduces the nuclear arsenal while maintaining deterrence, and takes a more realistic view of the security risks posed by countries that the Pentagon claims as pacing threat guiding its spending plans. This approach would free up funds to address the most urgent threats to security, from pandemics to climate change to economic inequality. With democracy in balance, it's time to focus on building a strength and resilience at home rather than preparing for misguided military adventures abroad. Maintaining over 750 military bases, hundreds of thousands of troops overseas, counter-terror operations in at least 85 nations, and allocating more than $800 billion for the military will only weaken America while distracting attention and siphoning off resources needed to deal with the non-military challenges that pose the greatest threats to human lives and livelihoods.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadali, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems and other issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the Holy Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all, supplemented by scientific data and facts. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and Islamic researcher, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi from the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today we'll be discussing mistake number 12 some parents make when they are raising their children, and the mistake is as follows. Some parents unfortunately have the tendency to not differentiate between their children. They treat them all in a homogeneous way, and they generalize, and they do not keep in mind that these are individuals with their own personalities and traits and so on, and they keep treating them as though they are one entity. They say it. What are the causes of this problem and how can we solve it?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه. A lot of parents who have one, two or more children, they tend to forget the fact that each child was created by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala differently. The mistake that a lot of people fall on or fall in with parents or educators alike is that they assume that all kids are the same, so therefore I have to be just and fair with all of them.
Right.
So I think we spoke about being just with your kids. This topic is quite similar to it, but that as an educator, as a parent, you need to take into consideration that not all the children are equal, therefore you can't treat them equally. In a lot of things, you have to. But what we're trying to say here is that in the way they create it physically and mentally, they're different.
Of course.
So you would see that some children, for example, are more sensitive than others.
Right.
There are some people or some kids who are like physiology wise, their body is much smaller or larger than others. So therefore, the requirements would be different.
So there are visible differences and also some differences we cannot see with the naked eye.
Exactly. So there are mental differences, there are physical differences, emotional differences, things you can see, and things obviously you can't, especially if it's an eternal matter.
Right.
Now, the mistakes that a lot of people fall in, and with parents and educators, is that they treat them equally without paying attention to these differences.
These subtleties.
Exactly. So, for example, you see sometimes a child, you look at him and he gets a message and either he refrains from doing that act or does what this look right. indicates to him. Where some of them, it really requires a lot of talking, even though you're trying to ask for the same thing. And some of them, sometimes they might need like a harsher kind of, behavior or a harsher treatment in order for them to get the message. So they're different.
Right.
Because they're different, we need to treat them differently.
And on that note, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing a mistake some parents make when they're raising their children, and that being them treating their children as one entity, disregarding the subtleties and different personalities these children have. Dear Sayyid, please pick up where you left off.
Therefore, we say that when it comes to children, you have to take into consideration that sometimes even biologically, what they inherited in terms of DNA, for example, is going to be different than your other kids.
Of course.
So they're not two children are the same. Each have their different
Our DNA is unique to every single human.
Exactly. So whether it is with boys or girls, the differences are there. Therefore, we need to have that into account.
Right.
So you know there are differences. Now you know that they are not the same. Your treatment now has to change accordingly. Like we said, where there are things that you have to be equal and fair to, but there are things that you should not be equal and fair to.
Because if you're equal, it will lead to oppression.
Exactly. So, for example, the child was too sensitive emotionally.
Right.
You can't, for example, hit him. Like, for example, his other siblings who are not too emotional.
And of they course, don't never should you hit, but...
Yeah, well, we're just giving an example.
Right, yeah.
So you see that the damage that will cause to the child who is emotional is a lot more to the child who is not much emotional. So, for example, with that child, maybe a word could hurt him, yet alone being hit, and he feels that he's been... his dignity is on the line, and he's, right. he feels that he's yeah. been... you know, abused, while the other child might not take it as abuse, because sometimes the mothers get, you know, frustrated and angry with their kids, and they give them a slap on the back or on the head or something like that,
yeah.
right? You know, not in terms of bashing them, no, obviously, but just a lot of parents do that, if not all of parents do that. But the child, sometimes he takes it as okay, you know, he doesn't care. And right. some children, they take it too sensitive. So even, for example, the Quran... when he talks about men hitting women, you know, he says, as a last result, hit
of
them.
Course.
But obviously this hitting, it's been translated in the riwayat that you use a toothpick right. to hit a woman with. I mean, what does a toothpick does to
it's
a woman?
It's only emotional damage at
exactly.
that point.
Exactly. So Allah is saying it's not the physical that matters to the right. woman. It's the emotional that matters to the woman. When she sees that you're so angry or at least not comfortable or you're sad or you're upset with her, and you throw something at her, that should she should take that as a sign of, you know, the last, you've reached your last point.
This is your limit.
Yeah, you've reached right. your
words
last
do not
point
work anymore. With this, with you cannot woman. Be more patient anymore.
Exactly. Right. And if the woman is smart enough and logical enough, she should take that as an insult to herself.
Of course, a human is a logical being.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So we're saying that the differences is there, even between a man and a woman, for example, in this regard. Or between children themselves. So this is the mistake that a lot of parents fall in when it comes to dealing with their children. And they treat them all the same. They give them the same things. They give them the same punishment. They give them the same reward, which is wrong. So we have to make sure that we do not fall in this mistake.
Let's continue this discussion after a quick break.
يا مقضي الخيرات
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, Be just between your children when granting things to them, in the same manner that you would like them to be just with you, in obedience and kindness.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات
Welcome back to your listeners of IRIB English Radio. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing, and today we are discussing the mistakes some parents make when raising their children, and that being not differentiating between their children. Dear Sayyid, just before we went on a break, you mentioned that not only can a punishment be unfair, unjust, and unequal, but also when we are rewarding our children. I just want to ask... For example, some children like to eat candy. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other types of children who don't like to eat candy as much. They rather have a toy.
Yeah.
So in this scenario, how should we try to be just? Not equal, because if you're equal, we'll oppress one or the other. How should we be just in such a scenario?
When we look at children, and the first thing here is to understand there are differences, and to seek these differences in our kids, because most people, even if you tell them that, like, yeah, we know, obviously, not our children, they're not the same. But you say to them, are you treating them differently?
Are you acting on it?
Yeah, are you acting on this information?
Right.
So knowing it is one thing, identifying it in your kids is another. So I have 2 or 3 children. I can identify which one suits which person. So, for example, my son, he's too emotional. He won't take being hit. If he's hit, he starts to cry and everything. Well, my daughter, she's a lot younger than him. If she's hit, she doesn't care. She just, maybe she hits you back and she, you know, she fights.
Right.
She's ferocious, right? So with my son, for example, a talk would manage. will suffice. Just saying to him, this is bad, you're doing, done something wrong. With my daughter, for example, she's a different case of her own. You talk to her, she'll, I don't know, throw 10 things back at you, so you need to still give her a slap.
Right.
You know, we obviously, we are in the pretext of an example here.
Of course.
So you can see that there is what? Differences. So I can identify these differences. Once these differences in my children have been identified, then it's a matter of me acting upon it. So even when we talk about the concept of justice and being equal, equal doesn't mean giving everyone the same. Like if I have to be equal to 10 people, doesn't mean I give them all 10 pieces of bread, because some people might be too skinny, or, you know, their appetite is
but
not as much.
But that is equality, but not justice.
Exactly.
That is actually equality in the essence of equality, but not justice.
Okay, exactly. So if I apply equality, like you said, I have to give them all the same.
Right.
But am I being just to them?
Exactly, yeah.
Of course not. So what I do is I look at each individual and I see what he needs and give him based on his needs. Same thing with children. Now we identify that each of our child has something that, you know, makes him different than others. Then I need to come to that child and deal with him in that manner, in that regard.
Right.
If we don't do so, obviously we're going to create a lot of issues. And that's why a lot of kids, for example, they start to have this hate between them and their siblings, or even towards their parents, because they see that their parents are not being just with them.
Right.
They're not treating them the same. And some of the kids actually even express that to their parents. I don't like this.
I do not want this.
I am not in this. This is not mine. You know, why are you forcing it to me? So as a parent, you have to make sure that you understand your child very well. And if you don't, you're going to make a lot of mistakes with that child. So this is a very common mistake that a lot of parents do, by treating their children all the same without paying attention to the differences between each child, which should be taken into consideration and taken seriously.
Right. I find a lot, dear Sayyid, if you would support me in this, is basically for the parents not to focus on being equal, but on being just.
Well, first they have to, exactly, you're right, but first they have to differentiate between justice and equality.
Of course, that's going to be the first step towards being a better parent. And with that in mind, we will have to end today's program because we are out of time. I thank the dear Sayyid for his insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback, or some comments, please contact us at our email, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. If you are much more modern and not so much old school, you can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 41 meters, 7300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iransat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.